It's Friday, the 20th of September, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, Canada's Justin Trudeau apologizes to the nation, but how will this impact the upcoming election?
Darkening your face, regardless of the context or the circumstances, is always unacceptable because of the racist history of blackface. I should have understood that then, and I never should have done it.
Israel's second election in a year delivers another deadlock. Will the country be able to avoid a third trip to the polls? Plus, security concerns affect an annual heritage event in Paris, and why the success of the Rugby World Cup matters to more than just the Japanese fans. I'm Carlotta Ribello in Los Angeles. The Monocle Minute starts now. Despite addressing the issue head-on by admitting guilt and apologizing to the nation, the scandal involving Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is not going anywhere anytime soon. At its core is a series of photos and videos from his past that have emerged in which he wore black makeup. It couldn't have come at a worse time for the Prime Minister as the country gears up for the federal elections next month in what's already a tight race. Here's the view from our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé, read by Daniel Bache.
It's a well-known fact that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau likes to play dress-up. Remember the Trudeau family trip to India where every photo op had the family posing in full traditional Indian dress? So it's not terribly surprising that a younger Justin donned robes and dark foundation almost 20 years ago, when he was still trying to find his way in the world. And in this hypersensitive era we're living through, it's also not at all surprising that this is being blown completely out of proportion, and not worthy of being a lead item on the front pages of news outlets that should know better. Does this story have merit because Canadians are heading to the polls? For sure. Should this be turned into an issue that makes Trudeau unfit to govern? Absolutely not. To be clear, there are plenty of other reasons where he's proven he's no longer the PM the nation needs. Was Justin in the wrong back in 2001? Should he have known better? If we're talking about what passes for acceptable in these brittle times, is it appropriate to place a 2019 lens over an action that was generally seen as normal party conduct two decades ago? Maybe it's time for a statute of limitations for such incidents, as the cultural appropriation bar is constantly on the move, and it's very difficult to know when you might lose your post because of a Maori-inspired tattoo, padding around in fringe moccasins or wearing lederhosen is suddenly deemed offensive. Monocle's been advocating that we need to shift to an era of toning down on the intolerance, learning there's a time to laugh things off and move on, and most importantly, learning that forgiveness is an essential tool in diplomacy and the advancement of humankind.
Tuesday's election in Israel, the second this year, was called to break a deadlock, but it has delivered precisely another one. The Likud party of the incumbent Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is chasing a fifth term, appears to have polled more or less equally with the blue and white party of his main rival Benny Gantz, a former general and chief of the Israel Defense Forces. Alison Kaplan-Sommer is a journalist for Haaretz in Tel Aviv and told Monocle how, despite the fact that all Israeli governments have been coalitions, as things stand, no obvious alliance is apparent.
People are just trying to game out the possible scenarios of how to get a government out of these election results. And too many people have said it looks virtually impossible and we could go to a third election. Other politicians have said there's no way that's going to happen, but I guess anything is possible. If Netanyahu somehow stepped aside, or a more likely scenario, basically that his party rose up against him and forced him to step aside, that there's definitely a high likelihood that we could see a coalition between blue and white and Likud. But if you look at Netanyahu's past record and his apparent determination to remain prime minister, I wouldn't see that as something that we could take for granted, of him just stepping aside. Big question that people are asking themselves in Israel is if some sort of deal was struck involving the president of the country that somehow traded some sort of pardon or some sort of dropping of the criminal charges against him in exchange for a graceful exit, could that possibly facilitate a scenario in which we could see a blue and white coalition together with a Netanyahu-less Likud? I don't think we should underestimate Netanyahu's determination. He's going to, before he goes to the scenario of possibly trying to negotiate for a unity government, he's going to try to peel away elements on the center left, the center part of the center left, offer them whatever ministries they want, offer them whatever conditions they want, and do everything he can to build himself a majority before he gives in to this rotation scenario where he would make a unity government with Gantz. He's already floated this off the record, but he said, okay, let me be prime minister for 2 more years and then we'll rotate Gantz in after 2 years. But I think he's going to try everything possible before he goes to that backup scenario. And certainly his nightmare scenario would be his Likud party deciding that they would rather have this unity government without him if Gantz, you know, digs in his heels and says, I will not sit in a unity government with Benjamin Netanyahu.
To Paris now, where security concerns are affecting an annual heritage event in the city. Here's Monocle's Hester Underhill.
France's Journée du Patrimoine kick off tomorrow, an annual event which allows visitors to nose around inside historic sites. Security measures, however, have been tightened this year due to the Gilets Jaunes protests planned in Paris over the weekend. The city's police headquarters and Ministry of Education and Agriculture will not be opening to the public, while other sites are asking people to sign up for a visit.
When violence has taken place in the past, it's happened on the street between heavy-handed police and demonstrators,
says Philippe Malière, professor of French and European politics at UCL.
These measures seem like a slight overreaction. The Gilets Jaunes claim to be the voice of the people, and they have everything to lose if they're seen as misbehaving in public buildings.
And now for a view from our editorial floor. Monocle 24's Rhys James examines why the success of the Rugby World Cup, which starts today, matters to more than just Japanese rugby fans.
In the next few hours, Japan and Russia's teams will emerge from the changing room of Tokyo Stadium for the inaugural match of the 2019 Rugby World Cup. The tournament is the culmination of a decade of planning, which organisers hope will provide a blueprint for next year's Olympic Games. Hosting a sporting showpiece of this magnitude is a costly pursuit, but big spending doesn't guarantee a favourable legacy. Even the eye-watering amount spent on 2014's Winter Olympics in Sochi were unable to overshadow the shoddy light displays and lingering bad publicity around the abandoned stadia strewn across the region when the Games left. Similar lessons linger from Rio de Janeiro in 2016. So how might Japan's organisers avoid the same pitfalls? One word, kaizen.
It's the principle of Japan of continuous improvement,
says Sir David Warren, the former UK ambassador to Tokyo, who feels that the choice of rural stadiums and canny infrastructure investments will serve the nation well after the final whistle. For the organisers, this is not only the opportunity to strengthen the country's sporting infrastructure, but a chance to demonstrate that it has the capacity, it has the facilities, it has the skills, it has the people, it has the resources, and it has the popular will and desire to demonstrate its strengths in this international sporting area. Those hoping to safeguard the legacy of the tournament would do well to follow Japan's example. Splash the kaizen, not the cash.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website. That's monocle.com. I'm Carlotta Ribello in Los Angeles. The Monocle Minute returns on Monday.